and Jill back with Martin Molloy. Tom Gleisner's with us. Tom, what have you been up to on Frontline this week? What can we look forward to?
Well, it's probably one of our most cumbersome titles, and I think it's episode 7. I've kind of lost track.
Yeah.
I believe it's called Divide the Community, Multiply the Ratings.
Oh, that's very nice.
Is that a credo you guys are living by at the moment, Tommy?
No, thank goodness, because I can barely remember it, Nick. But it's about the whole issue of, you know, when they like to have those forums on current affairs?
Oh, yes.
They love to get everyone together to flesh out an issue. Mm. And what they're really hoping for is the old Ron Casey... was it Normie Rowe?
It was Normie Rowe, I think.
Go on the old Biffo. Mm. That's what they're hoping for, and that's what the episode of Frontline is about tonight, where they pretend they're trying to sort of resolve a very serious issue, but in fact they're hoping that it's going to be Mike Tyson and whoever.
And any cameos we should be looking for? Darren, does he get a look in?
There is a bloke, watch out for it, in the forum audience. This is for real. There's a guy on the right. We asked for like Serbian and Croatian looking actors.
Oh, yes, of course you did.
Not a lot of them in Melbourne. And there's a guy there that looks like a dead set Croatian George Negus. It's bizarre. I know that conjures up a bizarre mental image, but when you see him tonight, you'll say, I know exactly what you mean.
All yes. Right. And is he related to Helen Demidenko at all, do you know?
Aren't we all?
In some way we are. So we basically they've dragged all the people into this forum and they're hoping that it's going to end in ugly, ugly violence, but you'll have to watch tonight to see exactly what happens.
Well, all the best with the episode, Tom. And that's Frontline tonight on the ABC. You'd be a fool to yourself and a burden to others to miss it.
Welcome to episode 60 of the Champagne Comedy Podcast, where we talk about the best Australian comedy show of the 90s ever made, Frontline, and other D-generation comedy tidbits. My name is Matt, and joining this podcast today is Danielle and Kim.
Hi.
It's another intimate one.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, we can talk about left-handedness. If there's ever a lull in the proceedings, we'll just talk about what we've done with our left hands. Writing, using scissors.
We'll get into it. Oh, and by the way, that little intro to the start of the show, that was actually from a documentary called Behind the Frontline, which is available on YouTube illegally. So we'll get into that a bit later. But speaking of the news, Alison was meant to join us, but she, at the 11th hour or the 11th minute, had to kind of pull out. So this is her story a little bit, but it's also Kim's story too, who... I wanted to point out when Judith Lucy was on the ABC, has been promoting her new stage show with Kaz, I believe, Kaz Cook.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Mm. So I believe she's touring, promoting menopause. Well, not so much promoting, but talking about it and removing some of the stigma behind it, I guess, through the world of comedy. I haven't didn't have the article prepared, so.
That's all right. Well, here's the audio grab that they had the chat on ABC.
The ladies are in the studio, from hot flushes to incontinence. It might not seem there's a lot to laugh about with menopause, but if anyone can find the funny side of it, it's comedians Judith Lucy and Kaz Cook. The pair have worked together on stage and on radio for more than 30 years and became friends after Judith cruelly mocked Kaz during a sketch on the 1990s TV program, The Late Show. They're about to tour the country with a show called A Menopausal Night Out, celebrating the funny side of menopause, but also asking and answering some questions. Judith Lucy and Kaz Cook, good morning and welcome.
Well, good morning. And there are many things that I need to address just straight off the bat. Firstly, incontinence is hilarious. Secondly, I in no way meant to cruelly mock Kaz Cook on The Late Show 30-odd years ago. As she well knows, I was actually cruelly mocking a magazine called Single Living not realising that...
I was at home recovering from a gynaecological operation, after which they'd given me hemorrhoids just as a little gift to take home. There I was, Sally, clutching an ice bag between my buttocks, looked up at the television on a Saturday night and saw Judith Lucy mocking a magazine which had me on the cover.
You see?
Crawling.
But so not mocking Kaz Cook, who I was an enormous fan of even back then, but of course I had absolutely no idea what she looked like.
Yeah, so I rang up to complain. I rang the ABC switchboard and got through to Judith, and we've been great friends ever since.
As soon as she mentioned hemorrhoids, I was in. I was like, this is a friend for life.
And I'm going to take issue with another point. I am not a comedian. I'm a writer.
Well, I could have told you that. I mean, I'm a professional.
Imagine
for the
how
love
it makes me feel. I've got a tour with the best stand-up in the country.
Well,
but
what Judith was talking about was season 2, episode 7 of The Late Show, and it was just in the lead-up to The Single Life. And the actual magazine that Judith is holding up is called Lovable Lonelies, and it does have on the front page, on the front cover, Kaz Cook. So, and here's a little snippet. Yeah, it's not on the DVD, but here's a little tiny little snippet.
I'm not being personal. I hope I'm not probing here, Jude, but what's that you got there in your hot little hand?
I've just got a copy of Lovable Lonelies here, Mick. Since you rejected me every time. I've got to say, I didn't write that line, and I've never been happy about saying it. No,
please, let's go back. Are you suggesting I would have made you say that, Judith, for the purposes of this particular sketch?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you're damn right too.
And so forth.
So the photo of Kaz is she just a model? It's just a representation of the potential people in there. She isn't actually a lovable lonely herself, I'm assuming.
Just an article writer.
Yeah, I used to read her books. Her kind of a teenage books about, you know, girls stuff, and still in print today. My teenage girl has got her books too, and now she's got a menopause book, so she's following us all as we age, and she's probably do a retiree book in about 20 years time.
Okay, so it's late April as we're recording this. We can smell Eurovision coming off in 2 or 3 weeks. So that means that we've got a couple of returning Working Dog series coming to Channel 10, starting off with The Cheap Seats Season 4, returning Tuesday 30th of April at 8:30 p.m. on 10 and 10 Play.
Since The Cheap Seats began 3 years ago, some have said that Tim and I have taken a superficial attitude towards news and current affairs.
I understand almonds are not a true nut, technically a seed.
There's a goat on the loose in Upper Coomera.
Seems the chimpanzees at Rockhampton Zoo could be the next Picasso.
In 2024, Mel and I promise to turn a new leaf and cover only the important stories.
Plan on pooing on anyone today, George.
The Cheap Seats. Only the important stories.
And it'll be interesting as to whether some of the developments in New Zealand TV news will affect the Across the Ditch segment.
Can you elaborate more on this?
So there's a commercial TV channel in New Zealand called Three, and that's owned by the multinational conglomerate Warner Brothers Discovery. And recently they have decided to shut down their entire news division, which technically it was sort of independent and providing all of the news bulletins on Channel 3, but they've decided to shut that down within the next 4 to 6 weeks. In fact, it's going to get replaced with another bulletin that's being made by a New Zealand news website called Stuff. So basically a whole bunch of news content is going away from New Zealand screens. And it's not just the commercial channels that are suffering as well. Even the state-owned TVNZ is cutting down their amount of bulletins as well. Hopefully, Pacific Update will remain untouched. We're keeping our fingers crossed for that. But, you know, it could affect the Across the Ditch segment. So we'll just have to see what happens.
Interesting story there, Daniel.
Yes, interesting development there.
I know, not very funny, but it's you know, media adjacent. Yes. And the other program that's returning is Have You Been Paying Attention? Season 12, that returns Monday the 13th of May at 8:40 on 10 and 10 Play.
Have You Been Paying Attention is back.
This is exciting. I don't like it when you get that excited.
Mondays are going to be...
Whatever you do, don't overreact. Woo!
Here we go! Oh,
perfect. Give it to me.
Load me up.
So good.
Phenomenal, despite Sam being a part of it.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Tom, Ed and Sam return to make Mondays.
Can I have a clue?
Oh, my God, I want it.
Oh, wow. Loose. Bonza.
Crazy.
Got a bit of pop, a bit of sizzle. Like a party in your mouth.
New Have You Been Paying Attention is coming to Mondays on 10 and 10 Play.
Oh, the Late Show Super Challenge on a budget.
Maybe a slightly higher budget considering it's Channel 10.
Yeah.
The only other quick bit of news is a new podcast alert. So Mick Molloy and Titus O'Reilly have their sports comedy podcast called Sports Bizarre. And they've announced a new spin-off called Animal Bizarre, which will basically look at funny stories from the animal kingdom. If you already subscribe to Sports Bizarre, you don't have to do anything. Sports Bizarre will come out on Mondays, Animal Bizarre on Wednesdays. And if you're not subscribed, you can look up the show is called Bizarre with Mick Molloy and Titus O'Reilly.
Well, thank you very much for those stories, Daniel. Hey, guess what it's time for? Yep. Daniel, are you ready?
It's all in this week's TV Week, packed with great family entertainment.
Oh, Jesus!
Daniel G and his program guide.
Thanks again. All right, there was one article in this week's Green Guide which caught my eye, talking about Australian TV and the World Wide Web. This was written by Mike Daly, who writes that... the ABC and SBS have a much more advanced web presence than the commercial networks. He writes that networks 7, 9 and 10 so far find little practical use of the internet. Apart from tech-driven programs such as 10's Beyond 2000, their interest in the net extends little further than headline-grabbing topics such as pornography and censorship. 9's Sunday, it should be noted, led last weekend's program with an informative feature on the internet, but otherwise the running has been left mainly to SBS with last year's The Big Bite and the ABC's more user-friendly, recently ended Hot Ships series. Meanwhile, thousands of fans around the world compile, maintain and contribute to home pages on the net. There you can discover a plethora of hard facts, soft fiction and freakish trivia about TV shows and their stars. Star Trek, in all its incarnations, boldly leads the way, followed by obsolete cult programs such as Monty Python's Flying Circus, The Brady Bunch, Doctor Who, and The Prisoner. And perhaps some sketch comedy on the ABC, perhaps.
Maybe. Yeah.
It continues, try doing a web search for the 9, 7 or 10 networks and you'll come up empty-handed. It's a puzzling omission by a broadcasting sector so driven by advertising. When I asked each network about its internet plans, 7 could tell me nothing. 9 alerted me to the Sunday program, and its computer services head, Kevin Orsman, said the network was aware of the net's potential but had yet to decide on how to use it. 10, which at least has an email link to its Cheese TV children's early morning cartoon show, says it's also exploring possibilities, adding... To go all the way for a complete program and news information service is, of course, inevitable, but not immediate. Like, it's amazing to read this sort of thing, considering how ingrained the internet is with the TV networks these days. I mean, basically, we use it to watch them.
Yeah, I think, obviously people were still on, 14.4K modems back then, and you couldn't actually load a picture that was bigger than your actual thumbnail back then without the whole... thing grinding to a halt, but at least you'd be able to have text-based news pretty soon enough. But the websites were very, very basic back then. I believe you might remember this, Matt. TV Week and the kind of the tech section in that, the internet section of the TV Week, and how
Andrew Quested.
Yeah, I emailed him once and was like, "Do you have like a pen pal section in your magazine?" He's like, "You could be my pen pal." I'm like, "Okay." It was like, that's how small it was,
I don't mind. On Facebook, there is a TV Week fan group or whatever, like an appreciation society. And occasionally there'll be the odd someone who has collected TV Weeks scan in a couple of pictures, and there will be one that would be on the media section or the internet section. And then you see Michael Jordan's webpage, or there'll be one where it's like, oh, this is the Gillian Anderson Testosterone Brigade. Or there'll be, and there'll be the equivalent, there'll be the David Duchovny estrogen cheer squad or whatever it is. But there's websites where they'll have the website domain name printed, but it'll be like members.aussiemail.com.au/wiggleline.
Tilda. It's called a tilde.
Tilda.
Yeah, there you go.
Funny you should say that, because they mentioned the SBS and ABC websites. So ABC got in straight away with their abc.net.au, but the SBS website was www.softcom.com.au/SBS.
Usually it's the internet provider.
I think it was. I tried looking it up and didn't get anything.
So you looked on the Wayback Machine to try and see what it looked like back then?
And
type it in and see.
It had captures later than 1995, but nothing of substance, basically. According to the Green Guide article, even the ABC website was pretty sparse. It only links you to six sections, each with their own links: Triple J, Hot Chips, Radio National, Radio Australia, Behind the News, the daytime current affairs schools program, and About the ABC, which, more in deference to overseas infonauts, contains a breakdown of the organisation, including its history, the orchestras, and a section for audience feedback.
Well, I'm surprised that SBS went to that, what was the company name?
Softcom.
I guess spending money on it, it's either that or it's going to be geocities.com/ Silicon Valley / way / 4406/ SBS.html.
Yeah, with a little animated GIF of a under construction page.
Yeah. Yeah. Email, sign the guest book.
So, yeah, it's amazing how far we've come with TV on the internet and the internet in general, really. Okay, let's get to the program guide proper. So on the ABC, after Frontline, Four Corners and Media Watch, it's the final episode in the third series of Absolutely Fabulous, appropriately titled The End. In this episode, Patsy finds herself disillusioned with her new job in New York. Saffron settles into university life, and Adina's mother spends her days at the Monsoon House drinking champagne and ordering items from the shopping channel. And Eddie has joined a New Age commune, but she struggles to fit in here.
Feel the great transmugrants. The flow from my essential oils are passing into you.
Yes.
They're flowing.
Yes.
Can you feel them?
No, but I can smell them. I honestly...
Oh, my deuteras.
So this won't be the last we'll see from Eddie and Patsy and co, because there's a two-part special called The Last Shout, which airs in November 1996, then two more seasons, five more specials, and that movie in 2016. And it also won't be the last we'll see of them on the ABC in 1995, but I don't want to spoil the next episode. All right, on to Channel 7, we've got Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. It's Season 1, Episode 16, originally aired in the US in February 1994, titled The Ides of Metropolis. Lois and Clark help a computer programmer combat a software virus called The Ides of Metropolis from taking over all the computers in the country. Wouldn't have happened if it was Windows 95.
Wow, so February 1994, was this a repeat? Or
yeah.
This is
Yes, it was a repeat, yes. Yeah, but, you know, like considering how well the show rated on Channel 7, I don't blame them. Over on SBS, Previously, we've had Defenders of the Wild. That's finished up, and we now have the first in a new five-part German documentary series called That Was Our War.
Before you go even further, I was skimming through my TV on my Fetch. No, I wasn't being not being paid for it. But there was a I flicked on Environment Channel, Nature Channel, and there was a program called Defenders of the Wild. I went, no way, that can't be it. And nah, this was one it? Was filmed in like 2022 or something like that.
Oh.
So, yeah, but all I straight away thought was this, you know, our show. Oh. And I went, oh, you've got to be kidding me. And that, because it was in widescreen, it wasn't presented in its 4x3. And yeah, it was.
And they were using much later technology than 1995. Yeah.
Yeah. So as you were, I just had to squeeze that in.
Yeah, basically we're going a lot further back now. Yeah, looking at World War II through the eyes of amateur films made in Germany, Holland, France and Spain between 1936 and 1945, reflecting the experiences of daily life during the war. All right, looking at Channel 9 now. So last week we had the special The Roswell Incident, Aliens Revealed. Got to pronounce the question mark there.
Okay.
So basically, this week they're airing the shows they were supposed to air last week. So at 7:30, it's Hope and Gloria, the American drama series about a woman who works for an egotistical Pittsburgh talk show host. So it's season one, episode four, originally from back in March '95. And you might be able to guess what the episode's about by the title. It's called A Fine Rom Ants. Yeah, computer joke, yeah.
Yeah.
Hope and Gloria get their wires crossed when they use a dating service. Then at 8 o'clock, we've got Frasier. It's season 2, episode 7, which originally aired in November 1994. It's called The Candidate. Basically, when Fraser's dad, Martin, declares his support for a right-winger, Fraser and Niles declare their support for a left-winger. And said left-winger confides some news to Fraser.
6 years ago, I was abducted by aliens.
Aliens?
The question mark.
Transported me up to their spaceship for a kind of conference. They're very concerned about what we're doing to our planet. You were right. Now that I've said it out loud, it doesn't seem like that big a deal.
No.
Yeah, sounds a bit like a Frontline episode to be reviewed once, right at the end.
Yeah. But yeah, I love that. Basically, this got preempted by that bloody Roswell hoax.
Mm. Yeah, that's like fantastic.
The week after, it's aliens. All right, so that leaves Channel 10 and Healthy, Wealthy and Wise. Now, the listing that's in the green guide seems to omit any names of who's doing what, but... basically, there's still a packed program. We're looking at the Public Library Service in Australia, as well as the Golf Cabriolet, I'm pretty sure that's a car, embroidery, a chicken and couscous dish, and the healing properties of herbs.
I'm sure that Ian Hewitson is doing the library and Tonya Todman's doing the couscous meal.
Maybe Ian's cooking parts out of the Golf Cabriolet, I don't know. Oh, but we're not finished there. For some reason, it lists all those things with semicolons between and then puts as a new sentence, also includes a visit to Queenscliff.
Oh, the beach.
So, yeah, suburb, it's sort of like, but that's not all. Maybe it's a threat, I don't know.
It comes with some steak knives as well at the end.
Yes.
All right, so that's the program guide. Let's get into the episode.
All right, and thank you very much for that, Daniel. Now, we have a very special guest to do an intro for the Frontline setup, so let's take it away. Martin Molloy, comic book artist and D-Gen fan, Dylan Naylor. So welcome aboard, Dylan, and you might as well get your golden tonsils ready, and I'm going to count you in, mate. So Ready? In 3, 2, 1, cue in.
Hello, I'm Dylan Naylor. This is Frontline Season 2, Episode 7. Divide the community, multiply the ratings. Broadcast Monday, September 4, 1995.
Yay! Nice one, Dylan. You don't even have to say anything. You can just hang up now. So, all right. Thank you, Dylan, for that.
We got him on the phone just for that as well.
Yeah, so thanks for not reversing the charges, mate. And as he said, the divide the community, multiply the ratings, the synopsis being when ethnic violence explodes on the streets, the frontline team is there to capture it, but no one is prepared to pay the price. Now, this one was actually quite... I nearly was going to be very lazy to cover this episode because I was just going to say, all right, let's end the episode here. Just watch Behind the Frontline documentary because this documentary is just basically the filming, the creation of this episode. Did you watch it at all?
Yeah, so I watched most of it. I didn't watch it many, many years ago, so I only just got a glimpse of about half of it. But it's really fun to look at how they just put everything together, ideas that might have sat on the shelf, and how they actually find the extras, and they go to a lot of trouble of finding people who look the part and they don't cut any corners there. And then just the whole thing to do with the handy cam and just getting in there and the reaction of the cast as well to say how kind of intimate, and it doesn't make them feel kind of worried about huge bits of technology scaring them and making them they're basically doing their job and not worrying about any intimidating presence of any kind of big cameras. And yeah, so it's a good thing to watch. Is there only one illegal copy on YouTube? Because there's some kind of a interference in that particular copy that I've seen on there.
Like just to let you know, this aired on the Thursday after the final episode of season 2 aired. In October 1995. It did also make it as a bonus on a VHS compilation of a few season 2 episodes on VHS. Really annoyingly, it did not make it to the DVD extras, which you would think it would be so easy considering both came from Working Dog. But, and like especially considering how extras averse they are compared to, say, the stuff that Tony Martin's put out, you would think they could at least put the documentary on. Thankfully, if you do a search on YouTube for Behind the Frontline, you might find it.
Yeah. And speaking of the documentary, this episode was based on a commercial TV debate special, Has the Media Gone Too Far? I tried to find it on YouTube as well, just online, but... No, I don't know where it is, because when they were explaining it, Jane was explaining it, and it could have been either 60 Minutes or a Current Affair, but couldn't find that at all. But one interesting about this episode too, Santo did mention in the documentary that they wanted to get Bruce Ruxton in the audience of the episode.
Yeah, singing his rap maybe.
Oh, no. We'll move on from that, shall we? to the episode, and there's office cricket going on due to a slow news day, And if you hit Mike, it's six and out, so just to reinterrupt that.
Yeah, it's amazing all of the sort of stuff that Emma tries to bring up as potential stories. You know, those triplets who were born 3 years ago?
Yeah, they'll be three now.
Three.
By the way, we're doing this episode without the episode guide too, so that book is now finished.
Yeah, so last episode was the last of the book, then, was it?
Yep.
Yeah. So we've got no script to refer to, we do have that behind the scenes documentary. So there's at least that.
So it'll be next episode where we're just all on our own now.
There's a little snippet with the documentary, which is a reference to a future episode, but I will explain that a bit later. Actually, no, I won't. Yeah. There's some sizzle for you. So, But we're in Sam's office, and Brooke is caught doing a not-so-subtle plug for brands in her stories.
Time is fast running out. What?
Doesn't take a genius to work out what you're doing.
Yeah. Point it out to us, Sam.
Come on, show us the watch.
I think in the documentary, Jane is a little bit hesitant about doing such a bad pun, but Santo, you know, being Santo the Magnificent, and what time do I make of it? You know, it's probably something that he's used to and knows he'll get a good reaction.
And what a magazine she wears on her wrist.
Yeah, long ends.
Very expensive magazine.
While the ball misses Mike, the cricket ball, that is, four runs, Brooke is dubbed the Queen of Contra, and Marty is a hypocrite due to his weekend holiday away in a magazine because Marty's just gone, yeah, whatever, much to Mike's disgust. And Mike is a bit fired up.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure why, especially considering considering all of the commercial, you know, Contra that happened in the previous episode, and the way he's been happy to sort of, you know, take things on in previous episodes as well. Suddenly he's become all high and mighty.
Yeah, that's right.
He has, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been on, you know, ski trips and all sorts of things, hasn't he?
Meanwhile, Dominica does get an anonymous phone call of a person speaking Croatian. Would it be, is that how you say it? Or they're speaking Croat or Croatian?
I think it is Croatian, because I did try and check by translating the subtitles, the English subtitles we received into Croatian on Google Translate. It wasn't quite the same, although it seemed like the Croatian word for story was the same.
Well, they were giving a hot tip on a story as long as they don't talk to that Mike Moore idiot.
Or Putalo, which...
There we go.
Well, I don't know if that's the Croatian for idiot. A Google Translate just put idiot as the Croatian for idiot, yeah.
No, you should have typed in Mike Moore would have translated to idiot. But Emma and Sam are going through their in case of emergency break glass stories. So these would be the evergreen stories. I hate to use that term, which they use in media. So that means they can use it any time. It's generic enough. Like Marty's UFOs. Could they be watching?
Oh, question what's mark. With all the UFOs?
I know. Good timing. I would say inadvertent, but good timing nonetheless.
Yeah. Now, Brooke's young winemaker of the year and an old interview with Jack Thompson.
I just got a call from some Croatian guy, knows my uncle, heard I work in TV, says there's going to be a bit of trouble at the Serbian consulate.
Is he straight on?
I don't know.
Any demonstrations planned for today?
There's a flower show on today, I'd have found it.
And this guy said that not even the police know about what's going on.
Off you go, Marty.
Probably just a bunch of WOG soccer fans burning a flag.
So you're going to sit around all day playing office cricket?
Yes.
Marty.
Oh, I love it.
Can I go? Can I say something that's related to the Croatian thing? Which is, I just had look something up to confirm.
Yeah, go on.
So, yeah, it is correct. It is Croatian language, and the only reason I know this was because way back in 2015, a friend of mine that I originally knew from the internet has a wife who is Croatian and has a Croatian language school. He was trying to boost his Wikipedia rankings by getting me to link to his workplace's website from the Croatian language wiki page. And I helped him by linking to his work's website on the Croatian language page. It's since been deleted. I think people realised we were just trying to game the system and get his thing higher in Google search results. But you know, that was my little minor contribution to the Croatian language.
Oh, goodness.
Who says you can't advertise on Wikipedia?
This was 9 years ago, so I do not partake in such things nowadays.
So are you the one who put champagnecomedy.com on the Late Show Wikipedia page?
It was not. I think that page has got enough fans. It doesn't need my input, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, in the kitchen, Sam allows Brooke for the Contra, But to make it more subtle, however, Kate tells Brooke that Jan has confirmed Home Sweet Home will do the makeover. You know what? It's a pity that it's Home Sweet Home. It can't be. But they'll do the makeover.
Although, mind you, with all the stories that I've talked about, that program covering on the program guide, home makeovers doesn't seem to be a lot of it. You know, like there's a lot of cooking and there's a lot of craft and a bit of travel there, but not a lot of home makeovers.
Yeah, it will be definitely an Our House type makeover. So with us,
maybe even Wouldn't It Be Lovely? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Sam reinforces to make it subtle. That's in regards to Brooke's bathroom renovation. Mm. Now, Marty, Stu and Jace have run back to the office looking a bit tattered from the Serbian embassy.
Sam, we've struck gold.
Really?
Have the cops rung yet?
Cops?
We got to get to the edit room, mate.
I tell you.
Where are they headed
the
off?
The edit room.
I might head down there, actually. Yeah, can you hang on to that?
And I love how Mike, as he walks off camera, Dom is just still holding the plate.
Dumps his dirty plate on Dom's desk. Just look after that.
But Dom literally holds the plate after he says, can you hold this for me? And so while everyone else is around Dom, she just slowly raises her hand up with the plate and just holds it.
Oh, my God.
Poor Dom.
And sort of, next thing we know, we're in the edit room. And it's just, like, it's amazing if you watch the crowd that's watching the scene that's unfolding of all the fighting. Like, it's just, it's amazing how raw their reaction is. It doesn't seem to sort of, there doesn't seem to be any concern anywhere about the participants. It's just about, gee, this is a fucking good fight.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
The thrill of, oh, this is going to rate. That's all they've got in their head. Like, hey, we've got a good story. Oh, don't worry about the actual victims and the
fight that's going on.
Yeah. And it looks pretty violent too. So they did a pretty good job at putting this on display, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the office though, Brooke is negotiating for her renovation while all the networks want a copy of the footage, because there was a part where, you know, do they destroy it? What did I do with it? Hand it into the police. And then it's like, all right, Sam will wants them to make a copy of it, give the original to the police, and then they keep the copy. But Sam is also discussing the footage with the police representative, Phil.
Sam, I'm asking you not to screen this footage.
Phil, I'm politely telling you, we're going to.
Well, as always, it's been a pleasure dealing with you.
Pleasure was all mine, mate.
Sometimes you shit me.
Yeah.
Oh, and Daryl, put those gates around the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, same guy.
Is it also, I didn't look up the name, I do apologise, but isn't that the same guy as well from Cracker Jack where he was banned from the game because he had butted a ref, an umpire?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm having to look this up now. This is what happens when you do research during the podcast instead of before.
And it's not Peter Anderson, so I found the name. It is John Flouse.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He plays Detective Phil in Breaking News / Frontline, as well as in Crackerjack. He plays Cliff.
Ah, good find. That's a bit of trivia for you that we probably would never have thought of otherwise.
He's also in Boytown.
Ah.
Plays the priest.
So he must be a favourite of Working Dog then. Mm.
He's in The Dish as well, and he plays Ron. He's also in The Castle playing Sergeant Kennedy.
Sounds like...
He's pretty much their good luck charm. Mm.
As well, and of course...
Did he happen to be in any questions for Ben?
No, but he was in
The
Late
Show. Well, there you go. Good luck charm.
He was he was in The Late Show, played Harry Bluff and elderly operations centre chief. That's where I recognised him from too.
Yeah.
You know, well, just ahead of it anyway. And you know what? The most recent thing he's been in regards to Working Dog, Utopia.
Yeah.
He's a voiceover in Utopia.
Hmm.
Hmm. Now, the show has an ethical duty to screen the tape to be seen by as many people as possible, except for the other networks. So they just need to have the tape seen by as many people as possible, provided that they are watching Frontline. Gotta take a breath. Now, in the studio, the footage has been screened.
Martin D'Estasio with that exclusive report. And just reminding you, that footage was exclusive to Frontline. Coming up after the break, we meet our young winemaker of the year.
Exclusive.
Yeah. So no huge logo emblazoned on like they would do nowadays when they probably haven't even taken the picture. It's someone from social media who's posted it on Twitter, X.
No World Star Hip Hop printed across it. So the team celebrates a story with credit to Dom's uncle. Now, meanwhile, Mike has little luck reserving a table at a fancy restaurant until Brooke intervenes.
Hello. Yes, hi. I was wondering if you've got any tables waiting tonight.
Here we go.
No. Oh, that's a shame, because Mike Moore from the television show Frontline was just... Yes, Mike Moore. Oh, you may have something. 8:30 sounds great. Okay, thanks very much. Bon appetit, Mike.
Jeez, I'm not sure that I feel comfortable about
it. Well, you know, you're doing them a favour eating there.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, still... I mean, they've booked it now. They're obviously...
All hail the Queen of Contra.
Yeah.
So have either of you had any like really lame Contra, like, you know, low key Contra in your jobs over the years that you can boast about? But like it has to be really lame.
I'll step away from that.
My work was allowing us to sort of go through all of the IT leftovers when there was a changeover. The unfortunate thing was that we couldn't take any actual computers, but we could take things like mice and keyboards and I took one of each, as well as a handheld USB barcode scanner.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Really obscure sort of stuff, but if I ever want to enter my DVDs with the barcodes in, I'm all set.
Well, this stapler here I got when the magazine I worked at back in London closed, where you could just take anything on the desk. So I have this Made in England stapler, and I've got the box of 2,000 staples, which I've had for 20 years. So that's still going strong.
Wow.
that's my Contra.
This is all sounding as enticing as that health fund ad, where, you know, you can take things like, you know, VHS tapes and, you know, like whatever they've got lying around the office.
So Sam tells everyone to be weary of the newspapers tearing Frontline apart because of the story. But the next day, the team are actually being praised as heroes, and Mike does his spot on the radio too because, hey, it's a good spin.
I suppose you were out celebrating last night, were you?
I certainly was, Peter. I was down at Moretti's Licensed Italian Bistro. A big hello to Albie and Peter. Magnificent food. Really.
Oh, mate.
Who says you can't advertise on the ABC?
Ah, fun times.
So I'm assuming this is a real place then?
No, but it's just the way that they...
Well, I was just wondering, yeah. Could it be real because of the reference to Toyota later on where that was close to what actually happened and they didn't bother changing the original sponsor, but we'll get to that later.
Now, the team actually decide to milk the story a little bit further with Sam deciding to get a debate going. Meanwhile, Dom gets a call.
Good morning, Frontline. Yeah, I can give her a message. Okay. Brooke, that was Jan. She said bathroom it is.
Yes. Did she mention anything about fittings?
No.
Because if I have to pay for them myself.
Gotta love the side story there. Sam gently persuades Mike into the debate idea, the gentle persuasion. That's what I'm using. A delivery of the Domain Chandon arrives in the office for Brooke as part of the Young Winemaker of the Year story that went to air. Now, Marty explains to Mike how the unwritten system works and how Sam has sampled the system too.
Sam's no angel. Remember last Christmas? Story we did on the Sydney to Hobart yacht race.
No.
You really don't watch any stories.
Oh, vaguely I remember it, yeah.
It featured a boat that came about 150th.
Yeah, it's coming back now.
Big sails with the word Toyota written across.
Uh-huh.
Sam's boat.
Toyota paid for Sam's yacht?
Mike, it's a bit more subtle than that. Toyota sponsored a yacht in the Sydney to Hobart. High profile event.
Right.
Yacht just happens to be owned by the EP of Frontline, who just happens to be doing a feature story on the race that happens to focus on one particular yacht.
Oh. Go through it again.
Yeah, so this is actually very close to a real-life story. So if you watch the Behind the Frontline documentary, you learn that it is actually based on a real story where I believe was a producer of 60 Minutes had a similar yacht that was also sponsored by Toyota. But originally they were going to put something else. I think Tom might have thought it was Kodak originally, and then Asante was like, no, it is Toyota. All right, well, let's change it to Toyota. And they're like, oh, you know, should we or shouldn't we? They decided, well, you know, it's close enough to the real story, so you might as well just go the whole way and then and keep the Toyota name.
It just goes to show that the writers of Frontline are also avid viewers of Media Watch. Because yeah. It was through that program that we found out about this. I thought I had seen that story before going through old episodes of Media Watch on YouTube. Media Watch talked about it on the 13th of March 95, talking about a 60-minute story that ran on the 26th of February. It was a report by Charles Woolley about, as Stuart Littlemore, the host, put it, that red-blooded Aussie fantasy sailing in the Sydney to Hobart.
And the man who got me into this mess in the first place, John Westacott, my boss, and the owner of this beautiful old mahogany sloop named Celeste, but racing now under the name of RAV4 Celeste, to acknowledge the generous, though discreet, support of a certain car manufacturer.
The full story is that executive producer Westacott persuaded Toyota, so they tell us, to part with not less than $60,000 and purely for the benefit of John Westacott. His boat received a major refit, new racing sails, new rigging, safety equipment, wet weather gear, the lot. And Toyota's quid pro quo? The none too subtle display of its name and logo throughout Woolley's story on every available surface. In our view, the exercise was unacceptable by the proper standards of credible journalism. Surely Westacott has abused his position and the Toyota sponsorship of Nine's program to enrich himself unconscionably, and all because he could guarantee Toyota free promotion in the editorial content of this country's top-rating current affairs show. It's not a pretty sight that we make the rules, arrogance, and it's an unhappy precedent.
Wow, that's incredible.
I know.
Because I actually found that documentary online, the full 1 hour special.
I'm talking about the Sydney to Hobart.
The whole Sydney to Hobart documentary from 60 Minutes. It's actually a 57 minute special.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's not exactly 60 minutes.
Well, a 57 minute ad.
Yeah, but it's there. So, but
did you count how long Toyota's logo was displayed?
Oh, within the first minute, the Toyota logo went up on the sail within the first setup. That exact grab that Media Watch played, that's where it flicks up. Now, the little part from behind the front line where they're actually talking about, as you said, Kim, the Toyota and Kodak, watching it is like, have you seen the documentary, the Get Back Beatles documentary?
The really long one that goes for like 2 days. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I've
seen bits of it.
Yeah. The moment when Paul McCartney is creating the song Get Back out of thin air. So he's just strumming along and then he starts the chords and then he goes, and he just on the spot creates a song. This is what the joke is like in Frontline with this.
Yacht just happens to be owned by the EP of Frontline.
In fact, I don't think it's private information. I think in this case, it was John Westacott, the executive producer of 60 Minutes, it is alleged, did a story on a yacht in the Sydney Hobart Yacht Race, which seemed to have the word Kodak.
Toyota.
Was it Toyota, was it?
Yeah, Toyota.
Oh, maybe we should make it Toyota then. And displayed a little more prominently than you might normally expect.
The wholesale, I think, had Toyota written on it.
As did most of the crew. We're just occasionally in front line.
It was a story on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, occasionally in front line we just mirror these true events, and other times we make them up. I think it's the mix of truthful ones and ones we've made up is great because it keeps people guessing. They then assume everything in front line is based on the truth, and it's not. But it's nice to keep them guessing. Was it Toyota, was it?
Yeah.
Shall we make it Toyota?
Oh, I thought you did a Kodak so that you deliberately kept the whip.
If we're going that close, we might as well.
Okay, say Toyota.
Let's do it.
That's an insight to their creative process there.
Yeah, it's like, just do it. Mm.
Sweating the small stuff.
Yeah. Now, Mike decides to follow up on a spa pool company to try and get some contra, not realising that the show did an expose on them. Idiot.
Yeah, because he doesn't watch anything that he just throws to.
No. But Emma does prep Mike on the debate.
Mike, you ready for this debate?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I've written out the names phonetically. Mm-hmm. The J's are pronounced yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. And after Brooke's story on the world's safest car, Mike holds a mini debate in the studio.
Disturbing scenes. And joining me from the Serbian community, Zlatko Milevnovic. Your comments?
First, I want to say one thing. The Bosnian Muslims are propaganda.
Now, hang on a minute.
I tell you who is propaganda.
Now, just hold on a second, gentlemen. Just hold on a second here. I'm sorry to cut you off, but this is a debate. And as long as I'm in control, there'll be no inflammatory remarks. Do I make myself clear?
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
Shit.
It's like, yes, Dad. Yes, Mum. Yes, Dad.
Just taking all of the wind out of those car company branded sales.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Oh, I love that analogy. That's great. Now, Sam's annoyed that the debate was a fizzer and Brooke isn't doing a good job keeping things subtle.
Ooh, champagne.
You want a glass, Brooke?
Oh, thanks.
Could drop this domain, Shandong.
Yeah, go, mate. Deserves to be Young Winemaker of the Year. This was sent to you.
Hey, look, it's Brooke.
Tomorrow night on Home Sweet Home, we go from this to this in just one day. Yes, it's celebrity renovator Brooke Vandenberg's dream bathroom.
That looks great.
I'm glad I told you to keep it subtle.
Hey, I had to pay for some of the fittings.
And with behind the front line, it was actually Michael Hirsch's bathroom.
The before or the after?
Oh, I didn't make note of that. But some of the inside of the home was actually Hirsch's house.
Who does a bathroom renovation in that short amount of time? Like that, normally in real life, it would take weeks and weeks for that to happen.
Yeah, but you've got to make it look like it's turned around within 24 hours, right? Mike thinks he controlled the debate very well, and then you cut the scene to Serbian and Croatian fighting in the car park.
No, they're very disappointed that they didn't get that brawl on film.
The next morning, Mike gets the dealer's info about the... This is in regards to the car dealer. Gets a dealer's info about the world's safest car story. While Sam, Marty and Em plan a giant debate with more people, up to 50 people. And Sam and Marty gently persuade Mike to host the forum in the studio. As Mike heads to Jeff's office as well, Sam decides to plant Marty in the audience as a, quote, witness, unquote, and to possibly...
A.K.A. shit stirrer.
Yes. I just love how Mike comes up, you know, has an idea in regards to the contract. It's like, oh, I've got to go see Jeff. But meanwhile, in Jeff's office...
Do you ever get stuff?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, stuff, because you're on the telly.
Yeah, I get a calendar from the Weather Bureau.
Well, there you go. You're not ashamed of that.
No, I pay for it.
A full price?
Yeah, and then what I like to do is donate the money.
Yeah, well,
to...
no, that's not my point. I mean, you're off my point there.
Poor Jeff. He doesn't deserve that. But I wonder what him and Mike were stapling together. But they're going through...
I'm just trying to look through my little... transcript of the captions to see whether that's mentioned here. I don't think it is.
No, because as they're doing it, then Mike goes 1,062.
Yeah, it's one of those things that might have been in the script book but isn't here, so we don't have any context. Maybe they're using my 20-year-old stapler.
As they prep the studio for the forum to host 50 people, M instructs the pilot, Mike, the show rundown, with Mike ready to bring in the ethnic piece. Now, here's a dovetail for you. As per Behind the Frontline, the studio that they filmed this in is Studio 31, which is the same studio that they filmed The Late Show in.
Oh.
This is in Ripon Lee.
I wonder if that means that whether the screen that's behind Mike is the same one that they used for 2 years in The Late Show.
So if you wanted to see more of that studio, which doesn't exist anymore, that was The Late Show. And now the forum begins.
Mr. Milavnovich, you have something to say.
Yes, you not understand this conflict. This conflict go back many, many centuries. First, when Turkey invade Yugoslavia,
Mr. Milavnovich, I think what you don't understand is that centuries old as this dispute is, it means absolutely nothing to us here in Australia.
So why you spend the last 3 nights talking on the program about it?
Well, no, good point, and I accept that. That's...
It's just all about just trying to stir up shit, and then when he realises that he can't really explain it, it's like, yep, good point. Move on to the next one.
It's not quite as powerful as I'll take that as a comment, is it?
No.
The old Q&A standby that Tony Jones would use.
It kind of reflects they were inspired by. You remember that debate, not the one that had Ron Casey and Normie Rowe on the Midday Show when they did Fisty Cuffs. That was about the Republican and the... Yeah, that was the Republican debate, for sure. And that, even though that moment was inspired a little bit by this episode, the one that I'm thinking of is the Ron Casey one where he has a dummy spit over the immigration debate that was on A Current Affair hosted by Yarn Event, where he stands up and then throws the glass against the floor and steams off and does an up yours to Yana.
Wow. That's readily available on YouTube if you're interested in seeing that one from 1988.
Yeah, and any compilations when they do the best of TV.
Yep.
It tends to get the old runaround or, you know, those 20 to 1 or anything like that.
Yeah.
Best dummy spits on TV. So after everyone is basically bagging out Frontline, Mike calls on Marty.
And very, very, very well put. Very nice restraint there.
Throw to Marty.
If we can just get some objectivity back into the discussion. Yep. One man who witnessed the violence was our own Frontline reporter, Martin D'Estasio. Martin, what's your view?
Thanks, Mike. And yes, I was there the other day. Obviously, I've been listening to the debate, and the Serbs say it was the Croatians' fault. The Croatians blame the Serbs. In my opinion, it's the Serbs' fault.
Go, Marty!
So let's not squabble.
And there you go. Big debate, big fight.
So we're going to talk about the... Are we going to talk about the George Negus lookalike?
Oh, yeah. Yes, and there is that George Negus lookalike that's in there. Did you see him?
Yep. It is an amazing facsimile.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone there is, oh, gosh. I mean, the mid-90s was, you know, the baggy fashions, the jumpers, the brown but not brown in a Hey Hey Saturday 1982 audience way, but a kind of a 1995, I don't know. It's not very fashionable.
Is it look like a schmutter brown?
Ah, yeah.
At the end of the show, Mike thinks that he has let Sam down. And as they're walking through the car park, Mike does show that he did get a free BMW watch and from that car dealership. So he was really, really happy with it. That's from the Safest Car story. And as he walks away, Brooke reveals that she received a free BMW from that same car dealership, which was in the car park the entire time, especially when the fight broke out after the mini debate earlier. And, that ends the episode.
Yeah, all hail the Queen.
Yeah.
You can find BMW watches for about $150 on eBay if you're interested. I was thinking maybe you got a Rolex or something like that, and then, you know, maybe it wouldn't be much of a difference between his watch and the BMW, but no, it's just a basic branded watch.
Anyway, that concludes Frontline Season 2, Episode 7, and the Champagne Comedy Podcast, Episode 60. 60 episodes. Look at us go. Plus a whole bunch of bonus ones. Well done, everyone.
Yeah.
Now we just have to try and work it into a bit of contra ourselves, I think.
Anyway, feel free
to... We need to do a podcast about the safest cars in the world.
I think so.
Yeah.
As well as, I don't know, the best tasting booze in the world.
Yeah. World's best streaming services.
Yeah. Best technology equipment for podcasting.
Right. Hello. So feel free to email us, champagnelateshow@gmail.com for any feedback or just to reach out. And also, I've got to apologize, Jeff Scott. Yes, you know who you are. Because long-time listener, he actually offered his services for any of our talent who accidentally can't make it to an episode. Allison's one was at like only a couple of minutes beforehand, okay? So I couldn't reach out to you, mate. Maybe you'll appear on a future episode. Mm-hmm. So just want to put it out there.
Yeah.
And also check out this episode show notes for all our socials. Facebook as well, Champagne Comedy Podcast Group. And don't forget to buy... us a coffee, buymeacoffee.com/TLS Champagne Pod. As always, thank you very much for coming on, Daniel and Kim. Also, thank you very much, Dylan Naylor, awesome yes. Martin Malloy artist, comic artist. I'm Matt, catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Champagne Comedy Podcast, created by fans for the fans. For more information on this podcast, please visit champagnecomedy.com. Produced by Matt Fulton Productions, mattfulton.com.au.
All right, great episode, guys. Good night, Matt.
Good night, Daniel.
Good night, Kim.
See ya.
Good night, Stuart.
Good night to you.